This is the Internet Multicasting Service. Harper Audio presents A Tale of Two Cities by Charles Dickens, read by James Mason. In a French wine shop, Monsieur Defarge and his wife plot the king's downfall.
There had been earlier drinking than usual in the wine shop of Monsieur Defarge. As early as 6 o'clock in the morning, sallow faces peeping through its barred windows had descried other faces within, bending over measures of wine. Monsieur Defarge sold a very thin wine at the best of times, but it would seem to have been an unusually thin wine that he sold at this time. A sour wine, moreover, or a souring, for its influence on the mood of those who drank it was to make them gloomy. No vivacious bacchanalian flame leaped out of the pressed grape of Monsieur Defarge, but a smouldering fire that burned in the dark lay hidden in the dregs of it. This had been the third morning in succession on which there had been early drinking at the wine shop of Monsieur Defarge. It had begun on Monday, and here was Wednesday come. There had been more of early brooding than drinking, for many men had listened and whispered and slunk about there from the time of the opening of the door, who could not have laid a piece of money on the counter to save their souls. These were to the full as interested in the place, however, as if they could have commanded whole barrels of wine, and they glided from seat to seat and from corner to corner, swallowing talk in lieu of drink with greedy looks. Notwithstanding an unusual flow of company, the master of the wine shop was not visible. He was not missed, for nobody who crossed the threshold looked for him. Nobody asked for him. Nobody wondered to see only Madame Defarge in her seat, presiding over the distribution of wine, with a bowl of battered small coins before her, as much defaced and beaten out of their original impress as the small coinage of humanity from whose ragged pockets they had come. A suspended interest and a prevalent absence of mind were perhaps observed by the spies who looked in at the wine shop, as they looked in at every place, high and low, from the king's palace to the criminal's jail. Games at cards languished, players at dominoes musingly built towers with them, drinkers drew figures on the table with spilt drops of wine. Madame Defarge herself picked out the pattern of her sleeve with her toothpick, and saw and heard something inaudible and invisible a long way off. Thus, Saint-Antoine, in this vinous feature of his until midday. It was high noontide when two dusty men passed through his street and under his swinging lamps, of whom one was Monsieur Defarge, the other a mender of roads in a blue cap. All adust and athirst, the two entered the wine shop. Their arrival had lighted a kind of fire in the breast of Saint-Antoine, fast spreading as they came along, which stirred and flickered in flames of faces at most doors and windows. Yet no one had followed them, and no man spoke when they entered the wine shop, though the eyes of every man there were turned upon them. "Good day, gentlemen," said Monsieur Defarge. It may have been a signal for loosening the general tongue. It elicited an answering chorus of good day. "It is bad weather, gentlemen," said Defarge, shaking his head. Upon which every man looked at his neighbour, and then all cast down their eyes and sat silent, except one man who got up and went out. "My wife," said Defarge aloud, addressing Madame Defarge, "I have travelled certain leagues with this good mender of roads called Jacques. I met him, by accident, a day and a half's journey out of Paris. He is a good child, this mender of roads, called Jacques. Give him a drink, my wife." A second man got up and went out. Madame Defarge set wine before the mender of roads, called Jacques, who doffed his blue cap to the company and drank. In the breast of his blouse he carried some coarse dark bread. He ate of this between whiles, and sat munching and drinking near Madame Defarge's counter. A third man got up and went out. Defarge refreshed himself with a draught of wine, but he took less than was given to the stranger, as being himself a man to whom it was no rarity, and stood waiting until the countryman had made his breakfast. He looked at no one present, and no one now looked at him, not even Madame Defarge, who had taken up her knitting and was at work. Defarge closed the door carefully and spoke in a subdued voice. Jacques 1. Jacques 2. Jacques 3. This is the witness encountered by appointment by me, Jacques 4. He will tell you all. Speak, Jacques 5. The mender of the roads, blue cap in hand, wiped his swarthy forehead with it and said, Where shall I commence, monsieur? Commence, was Monsieur Defarge's not unreasonable reply, at the commencement. I am collecting my tools to descend to my cottage down in the village below, where it is already dark, when I raise my eyes and see, coming along the hill, 6 soldiers. In the midst of them is a tall man with his arms bound, tied to his side, like this. With the aid of his indispensable cap, he represented a man with his elbows bound fast at his hips with cords that were knotted behind him. I stood aside, messieurs, by my heap of stones, to see the soldiers and their prisoner pass. For it is a solitary road, that where any spectacle is worth looking at. And at first, as they approach, I see no more than that they are 6 soldiers with a tall man bound, and that they are almost black in my sight, except on the side of the sun going to bed, where they have a red edge, messieurs. Also, I see that their long shadows are on the hollow ridge on the opposite side of the road and are on the hill above it and are like the shadows of giants. Also, I see that they are covered with dust and that the dust moves with them as they come. Tramp, tramp. Come on, says the chief of that company, pointing to the village. Bring him fast to his tomb, and they bring him faster. I follow. His arms are swelled because of his being bound so tight. His wooden shoes are large and clumsy, and he is lame. Because he is lame and consequently slow, they drive him with their guns, like this. He imitated the action of man's being impelled forward by the butt ends of muskets. As they descend the hill, like madmen running a race, he falls. They laugh and pick him up again. His face is bleeding and covered with dust, but he cannot touch it. Thereupon they laugh again. They bring him into the village. All the village runs to look. They take him past the mill and up to the prison. All the village sees the prison gate open in the darkness of night and swallow him, like this. He opened his mouth as wide as he could and shut it with a sounding snap of his teeth. Observant of his unwillingness to mar the effect by opening it again, Defarge said, Go on, Jacques. All the village, pursued the mender of roads, on tiptoe and in a low voice, withdraws. All the village whispers by the fountain. All the village sleeps. All the village dreams of that unhappy one within the locks and bars of the prison on the crag, and never to come out of it, except to perish. In the morning, with my tools upon my shoulder, eating my morsel of black bread as I go, I make a circuit of the prison on my way to my work. There I see him, high up, behind the bars of a lofty iron cage, bloody and dusty as last night, looking through. He remains up there in his iron cage some days. The village looks at him by stealth, for it's afraid. But it always looks up from a distance at the prison on the crag, and in the evening, when the work of the day is achieved and it assembles to gossip at the fountain, all faces are turned towards the prison. Formerly, they were turned towards the posting house. Now, they are turned towards the prison. They whisper at the fountain that although condemned to death, he will not be executed. They say that petitions have been presented in Paris, showing that he was enraged and made mad by the death of his child. They say that a petition has been presented to the king himself. What do I know? It is possible. Perhaps yes, perhaps no. Listen then, Jacques. Number 1 of that name sternly interposed. Know that a petition was presented to the king and queen. All here, yourself excepted, saw the king take it in his carriage in the street, sitting beside the queen. It is Defarge, whom you see here, who, at the hazard of his life, darted out before the horses with the petition in his hand. And once again, listen, Jacques, said the kneeling number three, his fingers ever wandering over and over those fine nerves with a strikingly greedy air as if he hungered for something that was neither food nor drink. The guard, horse and foot, surrounded the petitioner and struck him blows. You hear? I hear, monsieur.
Go on, then, said Defarge.
This has been Harper Audio. HarperCollins is the copyright owner of this recording and has consented to a limited distribution of Harper Audio as an 8 kHz computer sound file on Internet Town Hall. It is a violation of United States and international copyright laws to copy these recordings in any other way. Harper Audio is a trademark of HarperCollins Publishers, Inc. To order a copy of this tape or to request a catalog of all Harper Audio spoken word cassettes, please call 1-800-C-HARPER or 717-941-1214 or send mail to harper@town.hall.org. This has been a production of the Internet Multicasting Service. Support for Harper Audio is provided by HarperCollins and by Sun Microsystems and O'Reilly & Associates. Network connectivity for the Internet Multicasting Service is provided by UUNET Technologies and MFS DataNet.